I'm forever wanting to know or guess at what was Tesla's trimetal generator. Jim Murray believes it's a fable, a myth. But I know it's true because I knew a guy who ran into another guy who professedly did produce or did create something he called, well, it was a generator, it was a power station that could power a motor, and it involved the use of aluminum, copper, and iron. So I know it exists, but we know just about almost nothing about it. Now, what if the only use of the only use of aluminum in said device is due to the use of borax diodes? What if? Now, what does it really amount to? Aluminum oxide. And it's serving as a rectification for the aluminum anode to cause the current to go in only one direction. Now, what does that mean when it goes in only one direction? It means that it could give the appearance to the uninitiated, or I don't know, 100 years ago, of spurring or inspiring, naming it reflection. Now, aluminum parabolic dishes are very useful as aerials. But that's nice, shiny aluminum. Aluminum oxide coating the anode of a borax diode is not reflecting. It's rectifying. Yet it's in the same direction, away from the aluminum, but coming from behind it rather than from up front. So that's why it's rectification, not reflection. But 100 years ago, maybe, I don't know. This is why I think William Lyon quotes Dort Jr., who quoted his father, that in William Lyon's book, Pentagon Aliens, that iron is the magnetic, copper is, what did he call it? The active or the reactive? Well, normally we would say reactive. I think he's called, my memory is dim now on that one. But then he said the aluminum was reflective. Well, what if it's not reflective? At least not in this instance. What if it's rectification? A rectifier. But they didn't call them rectifiers back then, did they? I don't know. I don't know what they called them. Anyway, that's my thought on the use of aluminum. I may be trying to write aluminum into this mystery a little more credit than what credit is due. Not that it's not important. I mean, it's very important it's very important to install safeguards to prevent an over-unity circuit from blowing up. And the use of the iron surrounding the borax diode and the dielectric vessel that the borax diode is inside of makes sense, but the aluminum is just there to make it possible. It seems like a minor role, yet it's very important, yet it doesn't take up a whole lot of mass. And I guess that's why it's easy to misjudge its significance. You know, is it significant? Is it not? Well, yeah, it's significant. It's just not a whole lot of it in there. What if the use of aluminum in a borax diode serves the same function as the rotating aluminum disc in an electromechanical watt-hour meter? That thing will spin to infinite oblivion if not for the C magnet that's called a braking magnet, that its two poles are positioned on either side of that spinning disc, to prevent it from a runaway condition of spinning faster and faster. And we're doing the same thing with the borax diode, and the aluminum serves a purpose to support the functionality of the borax diode. So it may seem minor, but if we make an analogy with the spinning disk of an electromechanical water meter, then that means that the aluminum is serving as a load. See, I thought the electrolyte was the load, the borax or the baking soda solution of water. But that may not be the case. Now, aluminum oxide is a kind of an earth mineral. It's not a purified metal. It's returning back to the earth is what it's doing by becoming oxidized. So that might be the ground state, or the ground plane, I should say, the ground plane of the borax diode, serving to stabilize its functionality. But of course, you need the water, you need the borax or baking soda, you need the purified aluminum anode, you need all those things, but the end result that you're getting is aluminum oxide, and that's what's stabilizing it. Now, the iron surrounding, if my intuition is correct, that's what I'm going on, wrapped around. Well, no, it's actually, there's precedence for it in the EV Gray motor, and nobody knows why, so I am speculating that it might be useful in this situation as well, and also based on some kind of intuitive hunch. And why not? Because the iron's right there already as one of the electrodes, the cathode. So why not, why not make use of it by expanding on it? Because I can't see expanding on the aluminum. And now I can see why. Because its sole purpose is to create aluminum oxide. But why put iron there if the aluminum oxide is the ground state? Well, maybe because the iron is a floating plate and the glass jar, mason jar, is in the middle. So it's not the electrolyte and the electrodes that are the inner plate of that capacitance, that floating dielectric field. It's the aluminum oxide. Now, aluminum oxide, though, is a dielectric. So that can't be. No, that would be maybe the focal point of the dielectric field, not the glass of the vessel. What if that were the case? The borax diode is one half of an electrolytic capacitance. So I don't know. You know, there's still mysteries here that need to be solved, but in any case, the point of this recording is maybe that's the only instance of aluminum, and so my suggestion to use copper-clad aluminum wire for the load coil may not be valid, because it's just idle speculation. The limit, a safe limit of 70,000 cycles per second, is not idle speculation. That I went through various frequencies, and I found that 80,000 is too much, and 70,000 is fine. So I arbitrarily made 70,000 as opposed to 72 or 73. I didn't bother to find out, more finely tune it. I arbitrarily made 70,000 the limit, the safe limit for the frequency of the input. So that is not speculation, because the simulator is telling me that. But the simulator can't tell me where to use aluminum or iron or copper. Now, I am using iron in the voltage coil, and I'm using copper in the current coil. But traditionally, the load coil and the current coils tend to be the same inductance. Sometimes they have to be changed. Sometimes the load coil has to have a higher inductance. I think in this instance it does have a higher inductance, but not by much. So why consider it? Consider the load coil to be made of a different material than the current coil? If they have the same inductance, they probably are made of the same material. The problem, see, I had with that reasoning, that rationale, was that the load coil, the mutual inductance involving the load coil is so low between it and the current coils. But the mutual inductance between the load coil and the voltage coils is quite high. It's up there at 55% if the mutual inductance between the current coil and the voltage coil is 70%. So it's only between the current coil and the load coil that it gets down to 2.7% under simulation, which means we got to move it around to find the correct distance from the circuit. Unlike the copper coil, which probably needs to be right on top of the iron coil. That would be my guess. But what's being implied is that the iron has a pretty strong affinity for the this other coil that's held further away, much more so than the copper-based current coils, that the iron-based voltage coils. Well, it makes sense. They harbor a magnetic field all by themselves. That's right. Excuse me. Oh, I hate that. Yeah, it could be the load coil is supposed to be copper and not aluminum. I mean, not copper-clad aluminum. Yeah, it makes no sense to make it an aluminum coil. I mean, originally I used to think that way, which makes no sense because it's supposed to carry both voltage and current. Unlike the voltage coils, that they're supposed to carry mostly voltage with a little bit of current, and the current coils are supposed to carry no voltage because they're shorted out, and just lots of current. And so the load coil is a kind of a blend between the high voltage of the voltage coils and the high current of the current coils, giving us the wattage we want, and that's why it's one possibility for where to put the load. So I call it a load coil. Under these low load conditions of a 100-watt light bulb, but once we get to 100,000 watts for an EV, the load seems to be better to be placed on the DC side of the two diodes. Anywho, well, I don't know what to think. Well, in any case, that was the thought, that maybe that's the only use of aluminum and the only need for the use of aluminum. Anything else is putting it in where it doesn't belong. Yeah, I guess. So the borax diode, then, is more is really what it represents is an electrolytic, one half of an electrolytic capacitor, which means it's very important. It's very crucial to the operation of the device. It doesn't mean we can put in electrolytic capacitors, does it, in place of the diodes? Ooh. Oh, now that would be a good simulation to try out. You know, I have absolutely zero experience with electrolytic capacitors because early on when I tried using them in Paul Falstad simulator, it kept giving me a warning, an error message. You can't use this because you're exceeding reverse current. So maybe if I do put in electrolytic capacitors, I have to protect them with diodes, which amounts kind of to the same thing. It just means that I'd have more than two borax diodes, except instead of a full diode bridge, I'd turn them around. I'd turn the second pair of diodes around in reverse direction so that each of them protects. Well, I only need one, actually. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I would have to try that, one versus two, to protect the other two diodes. So they protect each other from reverse bias, I think it's called. Reverse current. I don't know why they have to say bias. It sounds so fancy. So maybe it does need four diodes, borax diodes, but they're back-to-back. Interestingly enough, MicroCap electronic simulator uses a pair of back-to-back diodes in its macro modeling the behavior of a neon bulb, and it's quite an interesting situation because there's a lot of power, a lot of leverage in the space between the two diodes, if the diodes, the arrows of the diodes are facing away from each other, I forget which style transistor that's called, PNP or NPN, but that's, I guess, essentially what they've done. They've put a transistor in their macro, and I think it's the base, the one in the middle, terminal that is discarded and ignored, left unconnected to anything. So it was good. I tried to talk this out in this recording, even though I should shut up because I don't know what I'm talking about, because it caused me to think that maybe it does require more diodes. Now, I could just use two electrolytic capacitors plus two borax diodes, rather than four borax diodes, I suppose. I don't know. This could get interesting. Although, wait a minute. No, capacitors tend to throw things off because it makes it too easy for it to explode. So I should stick with just diodes. Yeah, so if I reverse the diodes, does that encourage an explosive condition or not? What does it do? Does it prevent explosions? You know, maybe so I can raise the frequency beyond 70,000 cycles per second? I don't know. Now, it sounds very interesting, so I got to try that out when I get home.